Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 13th, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the planet. I'm Scott Long.
And I'm Zorag.
I'm Brian Fons.
And Chris Cosenza's not here. Woohoo!
Hey, we're having fun without you, buddy.
We are coming to you from the Ante Up Poker Cruise, of course. As we mentioned last week, I think Chris is at home busy working on our massive Ante Up redesign. I think he just finished it today, actually, so he sent me an email. So he could have got a whole full day of cruising in had he came. But instead, I'm doing the show here with a couple of our longtime listeners, which is cool. And first time Ante Up Poker Cruisers, and the first time cruiser for Zorag here. So let's just start out with what's your reaction. Let's start with you, Zorag.
Well, I'm happy. I've enjoyed myself and haven't cruised before. It was all fun, and Tracy came with me for our anniversary, so that was good enough for me.
Excellent. And through a comedy of errors, which we won't go into, we ended up finding a junior suite for you, which was really nice.
Especially since you get to record the podcast in
there. That's right. That's the whole reason we did it, was that we had a quiet place to record the podcast. And Brian, this is your third cruise, right? It's your first Ante Up cruise.
First Ante Up cruise. I've been very pleasantly enjoying it. I came out by myself, so I knew zero people other than you, Scott. I didn't know anybody else. It was great. Within 15 minutes at the bar, Zorag introduced himself and his lovely wife, and from that point on, it's been a poker room full of friends the whole time. It's been great.
Excellent. And it might be your last cruise, too. You've gotten beaten up at the tables,
yes,
unfortunately.
The poker gods are not treating me well.
And we figured out right before we started the show that I have lost is exactly the same amount of money that Zorag has.
Which happened to cover my drink package, so you didn't lose any money at the table. You just bought my drink
for
me. So.
Unlimited drinks for the cruise, so I feel good about that. No, actually, I didn't play much. I actually don't play much anymore. I try to play when I need to. And, of course, my niece and nephew are on this cruise, so I'm spending as much time with them. But I did jump into a game. You guys got the horse game going a couple nights ago, which was great. We haven't had that in a while.
It took some negotiation to figure out what we were going to play. We went from hose to HOE to let's play Raz that nobody's supporting me on. And then we settled on horse.
And I had to run off and do something with the niece and nephew at that point. I came back, and you guys had a seat, and I sat down and played, which was great. And then, of course, they needed me at the 1-3 game, and that's always the kiss of death for my back row. So I went over there, but I actually played pretty well. I was up, and their table combined. And I'm like, all right, great. I'll give up my seat so, you know, players can play, get up. Cashier had actually counted out my chips, had my money in his hand, reaching to me, and the dealer said, hey, Scott, I guess we still have one seat left.
Come on, sit down.
And I'm like, all right. So I sit down, and of course,
there it goes.
Lose it on a range merge, a term that I loosely heard. But I'm going to let Brian explain this because he followed his hand a lot better than I did. But I remember I had 9-6 of diamonds and got a little out of line, obviously. And then a flop came with two diamonds, and I tried to keep the aggression up, and then I ended up with two tens on it.
Yeah.
And then hit a six on the river, right? And did not scare away my opponent. But as soon as I tabled my cards and watched all my profits go across the table, Brian goes, range merge!
That's a range merge. Didn't work out, though, this time.
All right, so explain this to me. I know it's a big, it's a limit thing more than no limit, right?
Yeah, it works in both. It works in both limit and no limit. You see it a lot more in limit because, let's back out. So ranges of hands. You know, fundamentally in poker, when you make a bet, you're either making a bet to eliminate players or to build the pot. Those are the two reasons to bet. And your range, you've got your value range, which is the range that is to build the pot, and then your bluffing range. which is the range of cards you're betting to get people out. So what happens in a range merge, and it happens in limit poker a lot more because your ranges are wider and your value bet is thinner. So and I can construct a hand here. So
excellent.
Theoretically, so let's say the three of us are playing, and Scott's in late position with ace jack. It's folded around a jack. This is a limit game, 20-40 limit game. Cutoff, Scott raises with his ace jack. I look down, I got ace king, right? So I'm repop it, right? So now we've three bet with ace king. Zorag's in the big blind, halfway in or a third of the way in with some sort of pocket pair, like a lower, like sixes, right? Ace jack calls, we got three people to the flop. Flop would be something like 8-9 queen. Okay, sort of a not super coordinated board, but relatively coordinated. Something that can hit my range a lot, it can hit Scott ranges a lot. And the eights and nines can hit the big blind ranges there. So what happens? Well, in limit poker, almost always you're checking to the razor. And no limit as well. So it goes check, check, I bet my ace king. Pair of sixes thinks, well, I got ace king beat because, you know, everybody always puts everybody else on ace king.
Exactly.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's just what happens. So the sixes call. The jack's got a gut shot, and maybe that jack's good. So the ace jack makes probably a bad call, but in limit hold'em, you get a lot of those calls, right? Turns a seven, right? So now you've got same thing. Check, check to the razor. I bet. Now, poor Zorag's there with his sixes. Got now he's got an open ender on the bottom end, right? And he still had ace king, right? So he's got the best hand and the open ender. So call, loose call, but you got to make it there because you got the open ender. Maybe a six is good, maybe tens are good, maybe fives are good for those sixes. Ace jack again. Now you got your gut shot still, and you've got your ace over if you're going to get that, and maybe the jack's good there too. So ace jack makes a call. River, another seven, right? So now everybody's like confused and lost. check, check, ace king. So now this is the point where my ranges, my value range, okay, and my bluffing range actually overlap. And what happens here is 90% of people are just going to give up with the ace king at the end there and hope it's good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not. I'm going to bet. So I'm going to bet because I want to get fours out. I want to get someone who may have an eight out. I'm
sure.
Not going to be super successful getting eights out, but I'll be able to get fours out. I'll be able to get sixes out, especially from the big blind, because Borzorek has to worry about Scott behind him there, because if you call the 40 there, you still may not get a showdown because we could have a straight or something big from Scott. So you got to fold your sixes there, and you're disappointed you didn't hit your open-ender. So you're out. Now Scott's got his ace jack, and thinking, all right, I'm probably no good here, but you're looking at that $400 pot right there, right? And that's what it is. I think I added up, I think it's 390 minus whatever the rake is, and you got to make one call. And ironically, you've both at this point actually probably taken ace king out of my range, because an ace king doesn't bet the river there,
right?
For most people. So now ace king's out of my range, and Scott's like, well, you either got it or you don't, right? And ace jack is a perfect bluff catcher in that spot. So you call. And what happened there? I merged my ranges. I bluffed out the better hand, and I got value from a worse hand. And that's sort of where your bluffing range and your value range have merged into the same hand. And that happens in aggressive limit hold'em games all the time. So, and it's necessary because you need to be getting thin value out of hands. So there's a lot more thin value bets which overlap with the bluffs.
Excellent. So, all right. So explain that how that applied in my hand then.
Okay. So you had second top pair, right? The pair of tens was on the board,
right? Yep.
And you had a pair of sixes.
Yep.
And then the other cards were they below six?
I think the flop was like 10 deuce tray.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the turn. Oh, the turn was 10. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah. So then the sixes, you got two pair, and two pair is a good hand, right? So as long as he doesn't have a 10, if he thinks you're bluffing, he may call you with fours, fives, or ace three, or ace deuce, right? So there's your value bet, right? Or if he's got eights, nines, jacks, probably not folding anything above jacks, probably not folding jacks, but you've got eights and nines or something in that range, well, now he's afraid of those two or what he would perceive as three tens.
Right.
So you might get him to fold eights and nines and call with ace deuce, right? So it's a different... It's different ranges, and you don't know because you don't know who's what they're going to do. Obviously, I think it was an aggressive. I think you were playing as a bluff. I'm guessing. Is that right?
I figured at that point. Obviously, the first bet was a semi bluff with the flush draw, which I like to do. I like to bet that, and then if I hit the flush, then I usually will check to induce a bluff on the river. Exactly, and didn't get obviously the 10. But I kept, when the 10 came, then it seemed like I could represent that 10 since I bet out that flop.
Right. So you turned your sixes into a bluff. You got there.
Exactly. And then on the river, I got a little bit of help. It wasn't the help I was hoping for. But at that point, I figured I was already representing the 10, so my cards didn't matter. But I had the fallback of the six in case.
Yeah.
Just thought I was.
Well, and that's it. You had the fallback of the value bet with the fold equity if he's going to fold something else. So what did he end up having? Did he have something like eights or nines? Or?
Yeah, he did have. Yeah, he obviously had a bigger pair. He didn't have a 10.
No, he didn't have a 10. So, yeah, the...
And that's the only thing he could have had.
Yeah, exactly.
Was a pair. Yeah, pocket pair.
And you'll get eights and nines to fold there if the bet's big enough. And no limit, it's harder to merge the ranges because value, you can't bet for as thin of value.
Exactly.
So when he says you either got it or you don't there, he's usually going to be right. What didn't happen is that he didn't expect you to have sort of that middle range type hand, because middle range type hands don't bet on the river often enough, like you did there. So I like the bet. Obviously it didn't work out, but that's sort of a... Sometimes you'll get a better hand to fold and get a worse hand to call.
See, you learned something on the Antia Poker Cruise. I don't really know how I'm going to apply that, but... Unless Brian comes on all the cruises now to point out my range merge.
Well, let's get a big limit hold'em game going on. Let's do that. Let's get a 20-40.
But I thought that was fun too. This morning we did our, as we always do, our round table, and Brian was nice enough to come and share his advice with some other players, and we did talk about the range merge a little bit there.
Yeah.
But it seems to me, I get this question often at these round tables. We had a gentleman this morning that says, I've been doing really well in tournaments. I've been finishing like 15th, 17th, something like that. I just can't get to the money. So I quit playing because he's tracking his play as he should and determined that he's better off in cash, which I tend to think he might have misinterpreted his data to some degree. But we did talk about how that happens, how poker players get into that top 20 of a tournament but not into the cash and then get frustrated. And a couple other things, too, that were kind of interesting. But it was a good discussion, and it was good to have a good mix of people. It was amazing how many online players we had there this morning,
yeah,
too.
And with all the software and the poker tracker discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Jim, I believe he's a podcast listener. He came on our cruise last year to Miami. He's back on here from Canada, of course, so he gets to play unfeathered up there. Unfeathered down there. Probably unfeathered as well, too.
Yeah.
I hope. But there were a couple U.S.-based players that are still in Bovada and playing. So that was very interesting. And then, I haven't talked about HEDs in forever with folks, because it's been coming up on 4 years now, right, since Black Friday.
Yeah, and I never used the HUDs or any of the poker tracking software. So I've seen how it works, and I think I downloaded it, but it takes a lot to learn it. And if you use it improperly, you're in big trouble.
Well, yeah, and my advice this morning, I haven't used them yet either, but the gentleman that never heard of them and was interested in it is, I don't think it's something you want to get into.
No, you don't.
Because as we discussed, I mean, it's a great tool for improving your own play. The problem is when you're using it at a real table, the people you're playing against know how to use that information far better than you do.
Right.
And I think it's got to be really tough to win online unless you're able to use that data. Very good. And if you're not using that data, forget it.
Well, I'm playing against people who have played hundreds of thousands of hands.
Right.
Right? I mean, you need a certain number of hands for that data even to mean anything, because you need to get to a certain critical mass of data before it's meaningful.
All right, so Zora, let's get back to the horse game, which I was ecstatic to get going. I'm sure Chris is really disappointed that he didn't come and play that, because the last couple cruises we haven't had that game going. Your thoughts on the game? How did you enjoy it? Well, you don't get to play live very much, do you?
No, I actually... Well, since my boy was born, I lost my gambles, so right. I don't sit at the live tables much. And then also, if I'm playing 1-3 or something, I'm sitting there and the pots don't mean anything to me. So I'm right in that no man's land of, I can't risk this much money, but this money doesn't mean anything, so I don't play right.
Yeah, interesting.
But I saw the most interesting stud 8 live hand I'd ever seen, and that was when you were chasing a low. And you were, Scott was chasing a low, and Brian was chasing a low hand too, so you guys were trying to raise each other out of that pot, and I don't remember who else was in it. It was one of the dealers was sitting there playing for a while.
That's right, Herb, yep, and he had a high board.
Yeah, and then Brian finally backed out, and it came down to the river, and Scott was all upset because he missed his low, but then he ended up winning the high with, I think, a pair of tens.
Two little pair.
Rivered my second pair and scooped. It's interesting because, in stud eight, it's usually not a good idea for two lows to be to battle each other. If you got two highs, it's a little different score.
Yeah, the rest of us were sitting here looking at the two of you, and we weren't saying anything in the middle of the hand, but you could see everyone who was watching was just looking at the two of you and knew exactly what you were doing. Yeah. And Herb was over there just...
He's like, I get half the pot. You guys fight over the other half.
Well, yeah, and that's interesting. That's why stud 8 is so great. I think it's as much as I like Omaha 8, stud 8 is so much more of a pure game in that sense that you look at those up boards and you figure somebody's going high or somebody's going low. And obviously, if you have a high board, there's no way you can represent a low. You have to be going high. But if you have a low board, you got a lot of potential. You got a lot of different things you could do. And I think I had the reason I was so active was I had a flush draw. I had started four to diamonds, four hearts, or something like that. So I really was playing the high, knowing that I had a chance at the low as well, too. And then obviously that didn't get there. Didn't get there, and you still win.
From a deck standpoint, if you've got the low and you've got a pair down there, the last card, your down card, most of the deck can help you, because you can either get your diamond, you could get another low card, you could trip up on that one, or you can get another pair. So more than or half the deck is going to help you on the end there, and then in this case you got to scoop.
Quite surprisingly, too. I mean, it's one of those things where you look at it, I'm like, I didn't get the low, and I'm like, there's no way I can win this, right?
And the other lesson from that is always turn your cards up.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Always turn them up.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll tell you, I've kind of gotten away from that lately, and it hasn't hurt me yet, but there's a couple times where I took one more look, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I wasn't even looking for. Not so much a stud 8. A stud 8, I think I always turn it over, because you never know what you have there. But even in Hold'em, I played a little 3-6 limit game on this last trip before the cruise, and I got back in the habit of just mocking if I didn't have it, and I got to get out of that. I mean, really, and particularly in a 3-6 limit game, it's ridiculous. It's not like anybody's paying attention to what you're doing anyhow.
So. I was going to say, yeah, if you're playing 10-20, 20-40, then you can completely forget anything I say. But yeah, if you're a beginner player, or even if you're just playing once in a while, just turn your cards up, because the guy who's getting all that information from you isn't going to stay at the table anyway. He's waiting for a bigger table to open.
Absolutely.
And you could have backed into the low end of a straight, right? Like, you've got an 8 in your hand, and there's a 9, 10, jack, queen, and you're not even paying
attention. I mean, I'm confident in my ability to read my hands. I play enough Omaha 8. But I'm still going to table them if I'm there at the river and I don't have to pay anything. Well, here, because I could be wrong, and there's plenty of people who are going to sit there and look at my hand and say, he's got the low!
Right, exactly.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. And if you got a good dealer at the table, they're going to see it right away, too, because I mean, obviously a good dealer, right, all dealers should be reading all hands, but the good ones will definitely be able to see those small things, like the rivered straight or a rivered four-card flush or something like that.
I was also surprised at how much the dealers like dealing stud.
Yeah.
I was shocked that they were all happy to deal stud.
Yeah, especially since my experience is when you play a split pot game, at Showdown, there tends to be about six people who think they're dealers after the cards get thrown.
Well, I think with the group we have, that helped that a lot, too, because we all, you know, we would show whatever our hands was, and then everyone shut up.
Let it go.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we usually try to hire really good dealers. I mean, it's tough to get folks to take a week off of their normal job to come on a cruise ship because none of us make much money on this, but we get some dealers that enjoy the cruise experience, so even if they don't make a ton, it's fun. But, you know, a lot of our dealers are surrogate dealers. If you're a surrogate dealer, you got to be able to deal those games.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me how many times I go to a Florida card room, and we actually had a show tournament I talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. Recently a stud Hold'em Omaha tournament, and every dealer I sat down had no idea what they're doing because they just don't deal it here in Florida very often, and that's frustrating because if the games we like to play, which obviously we all like to play those, you like to have good dealers to keep them going.
Well, I have nothing but good things to say about the entire dealing staff.
That's good.
Other than the cards that I've but they have been very friendly and professional. They've done their job very well.
Good to hear. All right, so the other interesting thing I want to talk about from this trip, last night a bunch of us went to Chops Grill, the pay extra steakhouse here on the Enchantment of the Seas, and Royal Caribbean took care of us, which was really nice. So our entire staff went and had an extra seat, so we asked our good friend Brian to join us. Wonderful steak, by the way.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
Great dinner.
And so the funny thing was that we get down to dessert, and one of the best desserts on this menu, I look forward to it all the time, except I was just so stuffed last night I couldn't get it, but they have a huckleberry cheesecake. And it's really good. I love cheesecake, and to be honest, I don't even know what the hell a huckleberry is, right? So that was actually where the conversation started, is no one at the table knew what a huckleberry was. So we had to go, oh, excellent. So see, we should have had Jason there, and he could have enlightened us as to what a huckleberry is. But so we had a lot of discussion, whether it's black or blue, blah, blah, blah. And
I was completely wrong. I thought it was similar to like a raspberry or black raspberry.
Yes, that's right. We talked about whether there's fuzz or dimples.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, this is a pretty in-depth discussion, right, on huckleberries. Huckleberry Hound made an appearance during this discussion. And
did Doc Holliday?
Exactly. So that's where we're going. So the end result of this was learning that we have an astonishing number of our poker dealers and invited guests at this dinner who have never seen the movie Tombstone. Which, yes. Obviously, by Jason's reaction is
facial
very shocked,
facial expression,
right?
Did it, but yeah.
Of course, because you had the great Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday line, I'll be your huckleberry, right? And Ramsey was using his complimentary internet to kind of help us figure out what a huckleberry was, and that came up, right? So we were trying to explain to everybody, how could you have not watched Tombstone? You've seen Tombstone, right?
I have not seen Tombstone.
Oh, see? Brian hasn't seen Tombstone. He's one of the slackers there. But great, great movie. It's definitely worth watching. But that was a famous line, right?
Best tin cup scene in any movie ever.
And so here was an interesting thing, and I don't know if you've heard the story, because I hadn't heard it until we researched it last night, waiting for our huckleberry cheesecake to show up. The phrase that everybody thinks he said, and perhaps he did, was, I'll be your huckleberry. Right? And the way it's been explained to me is that was an old time saying that I'll be your loser, like in a hand. You know, hey, I'll call your bet, I know I'm behind, I'll be your huckleberry, right? Somebody else said, no, it goes all the way back to Huckleberry Finn, because Huckleberry Finn was a simpleton. And so that's where the phrase came from, I'll be your huckleberry. Pretty much the same thing, but from a different etymology, right? We had to read that word out as well, too.
Yep.
Well, one of the websites we found said that they insist what he said was, I'll be your hucklebearer. And because of his accent in the movie, it sounded like he said, I'll be your huckleberry. Have you ever heard this before?
No.
All right, Eli and I... And so, of course, you know, you can't believe anything on the internet, or you believe everything on the internet. You're one of either of those two people, right?
Yeah.
I'm the one that doesn't believe anything on the internet. But the person that was making this argument explained that back in the day, the handles on caskets were called hucklebears.
Well, there you go, if that's true.
And so what the meaning of it was is, I'm going to kill you, but I will be your huckleberry. I'll be a pallbearer for your casket.
In your casket, yep.
Well, that's at least a generous thing to do after someone's
gone. I was going to say, it's the least you could do, right? Interesting discussion, and I'm going to have to go back and research it later when we get off the ship and internet moves at slightly more than a snail's pace as yes. it does here, but that's very interesting. See, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I learned something new. I could have learned something completely wrong there. But,
well, yes. Well, do me a favor, and after you find out, let me know, because I'm not going to go through the effort of
researching this one. I'm going to say probably by the time I get back, somebody from the show's already researched it and sent it to me, like they did with the that movie I couldn't remember a couple weeks ago. PCU, by the way. Nestor, I believe it was, that emailed me right away. Oh, yes!
Yes, that conversation... The conversation was a lot of fun, regardless of the outcome of the information we got out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you never thought you would talk about dinner berries.
Exactly.
As long as we did last night.
Dinner. Yes, dinner berries.
The other discussion lasts longer than that, but...
And the cheesecake was very tasty.
It was,
with
wasn't
the huckleberries,
it? Absolutely.
Yes. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. So everybody, next time you come on an Andy Up cruise, go to Chops Grill, get the huckleberry cheesecake, and start a conversation with your dinner mates about what the hell a huckleberry is and what Doc Holliday actually said.
That's
and
it.
It'll keep you entertained all the way through the end of dessert. You got to come up with something later for the post-dessert drinks.
Exactly.
All right, well, anything else, guys, from your first experience cruising with Andy Up?
Well, I'd like to jealously take this time to say happy 8th anniversary to my wife, Tracy.
Aww.
Anniversary cruise is
you can at least say hi.
Hi.
Excellent. All right. Well, so much fun having you guys on. I mean, this is one of the things I was talking to, and we have one of the poker room managers that bought a bunch of packages on board, and I was telling her that, you know, we don't make a ton of money on these cruises, but the best part for me is seeing all our repeat passengers come back on and embrace. I mean, some of them just saw each other like 2 months ago on the last cruise, but it seems like a lifetime, and the friends we made there, and related to that is getting these folks that have been screen names for almost 10 years now. It's almost been 10 years since we started this podcast. It's kind of crazy to think about it.
Wow.
Coming up this summer and putting Face's name. Obviously, I've met you guys before you came on the cruise, so it's a little different story. But to get on and hang out on cruise and play some cards with folks that we've been bantering back and forth in chat boxes and email boxes for years, so that's been pretty cool. So hopefully everybody out there listening will come and join us on a future cruise. Remember, our next one is April 10th out of Baltimore, and then we'll be doing October 25th out of Boston, November 7th out of Tampa, and January 24th next year out of LA. And we'll be adding some more cruises soon. Get all the information at antiocruises.com. And we'll be back next week with your regular show with Chris, hopefully, and all your favorite segments. Until then, I'm Scott Long.
I'm Zorag.
And Brian Fox.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.